Welcome to today's episode. Could assisted dying for terminal anorexia be coming to the NHS? My name is Chelsea Roth, and I'm the executive director of Eat, Breathe, Thrive, a nonprofit organization that supports people recovering from eating disorders. I'm also a researcher, and today I'd like to share findings from our recent study, which explored how assisted dying laws are being used to help young women with eating disorders die by euthanasia and assisted suicide. With the UK considering a law that would legalize assisted dying for the terminally ill, our findings raise concerns about the efficacy of legal safeguards. Internationally, there have already been over 60 documented cases of young women with eating disorders being assisted in death, including in countries that restrict the practice to terminal illness. In this episode, I'd like to share insights from our recent systematic review on this topic, discuss how the case has unfolded abroad, and explore potential loopholes in the assisted dying bill being considered in the UK. Along the way, we'll examine critical questions about the ethics of assisted dying, the challenges in defining terminal illness, and the very real consequences when safeguards fail. So with that, let's get started. When I learned about a physician in Colorado helping patients with eating disorders die by assisted suicide, I was stunned. I hoped it was a tragic mistake. In the US, assisted suicide is only legal in a handful of states for people with terminal illness. How could someone with a mental illness qualify as terminally ill? I have spent my career running a charity to help people recover from eating disorders. I am also a researcher, so I turned to the literature for answers. How often had this happened? What medical rationales were being used to justify it? To my surprise, there were almost no studies on the subject. Scattered case reports from Belgium, the Netherlands, and Switzerland existed, but comprehensive data were lacking. To address this gap, my colleague, Dr. Catherine Cucatone, and I conducted a systematic review to uncover how many patients with eating disorders had been assisted in death internationally. The findings were alarming. At least 60 patients with eating disorders had been assisted in death across Belgium, the Netherlands, and the United States. A third were in their teens or 20s, and all were female. Troublingly, many of these deaths were not reported in public government documents, raising concerns that the failures of legal safeguards were going unnoticed. Kim Leadbeater's assisted dying bill aims to provide a framework for terminally ill patients to die by lethal medications prescribed by a physician. At first glance, its definition of a terminal condition, which states an inevitably progressive illness which cannot be reversed by treatment, for which death can be reasonably predicted within 6 months, that definition appears clear and vigorous. However, similar definitions in other countries have allowed vulnerable young women with eating disorders to qualify for assisted death under concerning circumstances. Evidence from Oregon, California, and Colorado shows how definitions of terminal illness have been stretched to include eating disorders. Physicians have invoked the term terminal anorexia to assert that young women with anorexia qualify for assisted death. I'd like to share two quotes from cases we reviewed. Here's the first. Since terminal anorexia clearly involves deteriorating physiological status due to malnutrition, this quality alone differentiates it from other psychiatric conditions. And here's the second. Anorexia nervosa carries a guaranteed medical cause of death from malnutrition should weight loss continue unabated. A prognosis of less than 6 months can be fairly established when the patient stops engaging in active recovery work. So some might argue that these are exceptional cases and that anorexia would not be considered terminal in the UK. Yet similar reasoning has already been applied in British courts to withdraw treatment from women with anorexia. In the NHS Trust versus L, which happened in 2012, the Court of Protection deemed a 29-year-old woman with anorexia to be in the, and I quote, terminal stage of her illness, and concluded that further treatment was not in her best interests. Here's a quote from the ruling. The prospects of her recovery overall approach zero, given that it is extremely unlikely that Miss L would recover from her anorexia. It is not in her best interest to make attempts to reverse her weight loss, which require coercion, restraint, or sedation. It is in her best interest to move to palliative care if L is in the terminal stage of her illness. There is no evidence for a terminal stage of anorexia. Decades of research suggest that while eating disorders have high mortality rates, many deaths result from suicide or inadequate treatment. The medical consequences of anorexia are largely reversible with sustained nutrition and weight restoration. In many cases we reviewed, clinicians presented a false dichotomy, coercive and forced treatment on one side or death on the other. This may actively abandon patients who could recover with effective care. So does the bill exclude those with mental illness? Many believe concerns about eating disorders are unwarranted, as the bill explicitly excludes mental disorders as a sole qualifying condition for assisted dying. However, an analysis of the bill's language and emerging clinical discourse suggests that eating disorders could still fall within its scope. The assisted dying bill states that, and I quote, "A person is not considered terminally ill solely by reason of a mental illness." While this may appear protective, the inclusion of the word solely creates ambiguity. Severe physical complications from malnutrition could potentially allow patients with eating disorders to qualify as terminally ill. This loophole has already been exploited in the US. Our research has identified a further 25 cases in Colorado and California where the qualifying terminal condition for assisted death was listed as malnutrition. Although the limited data do not clarify whether these patients also had anorexia nervosa, and these are in addition to the 60 cases that we found in our systematic review, the clinical discourse in confirmed cases raises concerns. For instance, in one case, a physician justified prescribing a lethal medication to a 36-year-old woman with anorexia by describing her condition as, and I quote, "terminal malnutrition." Here's a quote from that case. As the human body can be exceptionally resilient, even with terminal malnutrition, having the medications at hand would give this patient the opportunity, while having an intact brain, to choose not to suffer through additional weeks of extreme physical discomfort and weakness. That's the end of that quote, and I should mention that this patient did not have irreversible organ failure or any other known co-occurring terminal illness. In another case, a physician likened anorexia to other physical conditions eligible for assisted dying. Here's a quote from that case. Indeed, highly regarded eating disorder authorities now consider anorexia to be a metabolic psychiatric condition, a claim generally not made for the other psychiatric disorders listed. No one would argue that metabolic disorders can't progress to terminal phases. I should mention that efforts to empirically define a terminal stage of anorexia have been unsuccessful. While some rare complications of eating disorders, such as osteoporosis or gastrointestinal rupture, may be irreversible in the sense that they cannot be fully cured, they often significantly improve with renourishment and can be effectively managed with proper treatment. Many patients facing these complications recover and go on to live fulfilling lives. So can irreversible but manageable conditions qualify as terminal? This is a very important question in this bill. So this raises an important question. Does the bill's definition of terminal condition adequately distinguish between a condition that is inevitably fatal and one that only becomes terminal without adequate treatment? One of the most troubling findings from our study was that many women who were assisted in suicide had not received adequate treatment. In some cases, clinicians declared their deaths inevitable, despite many treatment options remaining unexplored. In one case, a physician suggested assisted suicide to a patient with anorexia, and the physician was the one who suggested it. And this patient had never even completed residential treatment for her eating disorder. When her parents asked if any other treatment options remained, such as a feeding tube, the physician responded, and I quote, "If someone restricts the tube God gave them, i.e., their esophagus, they would also be very likely to restrict their food through a surgical feeding tube. So that would not be a long-term solution." The implications of our research extend beyond eating disorders. In Oregon, for example, government officials have confirmed that patients with diabetes can qualify for assisted dying and qualify as terminally ill if they decline or cannot afford insulin. The state's 2021 Death with Dignity report lists arthritis, hernias, kidney failure, and anorexia among conditions deemed eligible for assisted death. Conditions that are, while incurable, not inherently terminal when treated. And again, this is another jurisdiction that restricts assisted dying to the terminally ill. In 2017, during Sweden's debate over assisted dying, Swedish researchers contacted Oregon officials to clarify how terminal illness is legally interpreted. They asked whether a diabetes patient declining insulin could qualify as terminal. The Oregon Health Authority confirmed, yes, these patients would qualify. The law does not compel patients to have exhausted all treatment options first or to continue current treatment. If the patient decides they don't want treatment, that is their choice. When the researchers asked whether a diabetes patient who can't afford treatment would qualify for assisted dying, the response was also troubling. Patients may not be able to afford some treatments. If the patient does not receive treatment or medication and for whatever reason is left with a terminal illness, then she or he would qualify. These are deaths of poverty, not dignity. The similarities between Oregon's definition of terminal illness and the one proposed in the UK bill raise serious concerns about how the bill could be expanded through interpretation. Could a patient with a treatable illness facing NHS delays or limited access to care be deemed terminally ill if their death becomes foreseeable within 6 months due to lack of treatment? With a third reading on assisted dying looming, the question before lawmakers is whether this bill can be safely implemented within the NHS. Evidence from other countries shows how safeguards that appear rigorous on paper can be subject to varying interpretation in clinical practice. Our research suggests that the failures of these safeguards often go unnoticed, buried in vague reports, with victims who are no longer alive to speak.